If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I want winners. I want people that want to win.
Rod, you'll never know how I watched this 49ers game last night.
Tell me.
So I'm on vacation. I'm in Arizona, hanging out with, on the drive to Arizona to hang out with my family. And Arizona's 1 hour ahead of us in the Bay Area. So as it turns to about 6:30, 6:45, I asked my wife to take the wheel. And we still got about 2 hours left on this drive. And I have my phone, and I'm battling cell signal, ESPN's app, and I'm trying to, like, watch it and not get disconnected and then get back on. And so imagine watching a full football game on your phone. That's how I watched it. And it was as gnarly of an experience it was to watch a football game like that. The 49ers and Panthers gave me an even gnarlier experience of a football game. Though, you know, I kind of think that that kind of game, at least for the Niners, it was good for them because it just showed you, now we're more talented than the Panthers, but it just showed you how all of these other teams are just dealing with a lot of the same stuff. The injuries piling up. The Panthers lose like four guys within like the first half of the game. And the Niners, dealing with what they've dealt through the entire season, it's like almost the healthiest that they've been since they lost Fred and Nick. And it was not a great game, but it was kind of like, I was like, okay, this is the version of the football game that the 49ers can win, because all they have to do is score 20 points because Bryce Young was not going to score 20 points, even with that bad 49ers defense. So I was kind of happy that it was a bit of like a struggle of a game. And, you know, in some instances, it resembled, you know, very early season football. Like, I just couldn't imagine how off Bryce Young and his receivers were throughout. Like, there were moments where I was like, okay, this is where the Niners, you know, they're kind of playing that style of football where they just let these teams hang out, and this is where the Panthers, they're going to make their imprint. Nope, Bryce Young rolled to the left, throw to Tet McMillan, and McMillan's like 5 yards away from where the football goes. Like, it was kind of, I was very surprised about that, but at the same time, just happy that the Niners were able to play that Panthers offense.
Yeah, that was, you know, one of my notes was, is this just that the Panthers are bad, or is the defense playing well? And I fell more in line with the fact that it was shocking to see, you know, this team is, you know, has a winning record. They're 6-5, and they're having problems just, you know, executing basic plays. It was a tough watch. It was a tough watch. But that's the Panthers, though. This is a team that will beat, you know, they beat the Bills, but then, you know, they'll lose to the Saints. I mean, so that's just, you know, kind of where they are in their, you know, level of development. But yeah, it was definitely a good win for us. And you know, I guess we'll talk about Brock at some point. It was not...
You mean YOLO Brock. You got to call him by his government name, YOLO Brock.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the one thing I'll say, we've talked about YOLO Brock before, is that, you know, three picks in, I had no belief that Brock was going to get conservative and stop throwing the ball. So,
well, not only that, you had no belief, as did I, that Mac Jones was going to play. I was like, no, Mac is not coming into this game. Brock will have to throw a couple of pick sixes in there for Mac to come into this game. There were things in that game where you saw mm-hmm. why Brock was in there instead of Mac. But yeah, it was YOLO Brock was like, I'm here, guys, I'm here.
And Kyle pretty much said the same thing. Is it no? That was never a consideration. You know, that's, you know, you get what you get from Brock for the good and the bad. And like you say, there were a lot of times where you saw his mobility. You know, he was able to extend plays and he was just off. I mean, that was, you know, the two interceptions were really just, you know, bad ball placement. And then the third one was just a good play. But yeah, he just didn't have a great game.
All right, before we even really dig into the game, we have to talk about this report by Diana Russini and Michael Silver, which I think it was on last week, like on Friday maybe, or maybe even whatever the 21st was.
Mm-hmm.
This, not that I would say that we have been kind of on top of this one in a way, in that, you know, lots of 49er fans were like, Ayuk is coming back, Ayuk is coming back. And we were like, we hope Ayuk is coming back. Like, this is mm-hmm. not, you know, in the perfect world, yeah, Ayuk comes back. But, you know, they're depending on how you wanted to look at this season, there's also a way that he wasn't going to come back. Now, I will say I didn't expect it to be because of the prior frustrations that the 49ers and Ayuk have had with each other. But the report came out and it said, it now appears that Ayuk and the 49ers are headed for a stunning divorce. There hasn't been a lot of information about which meetings he didn't attend and what participation he wasn't involved in and team activities, X, Y, and Z. But it sounds like when the Niners re-upped him last year, we all remember that hold-in and all the craziness going on, it sounds like there were things written in that contract. And maybe this is the evil genius of Parag Marate that just didn't happen, which allowed the 49ers to void his guarantees for this upcoming season. And on the flip side, maybe this is Ayuk like really getting what he wants, but he did not fight this with the Players Association. So it looks like we're headed for a divorce this offseason where he's just going to be able to go wherever he wants to go. The Niners will save some money, but they will have a pretty bad dead cap hit, I think. Mm-hmm. And we'll, you know, we'll have the Brandon Ayuk whole thing behind us, and we'll have to go find a new number one wide receiver next year.
Yeah, and for those who are new here, just so you know, whenever you see a Michael Silver byline, that's coming directly from the desk of Jed York. Just know that. So he is the mouthpiece of the San Francisco 49ers front office management. So this is, and you can tell just by the reporting that that's what this is, because it was what was bizarre, even more, what made an even more a bizarre story even more bizarre is when the head coach then comes out and refutes the claims that he missed meetings and, you know, basically says that, you know, guys on IR, they are on a different deal, you know. There is no real, which is stunning to say. Well, but it's not if you've been here. There's clearly a divide between the business side and the football side in this organization,
which is the history of like the last 15 years of this team, right?
Yeah.
So once Harbaugh came on, there has been this struggle with personnel and with the way that the cap works and what the Niners are willing to do monetarily. And that's what I was saying about the evil genius of Parag, because if they set this contract up knowing historically maybe what Aiyuk was not interested in doing, then maybe it was set up to work this way. But you know, one of those like Aiyuk, you better not cross this line or else, and him just not blinking and being like, I'm good. If you guys want to avoid this, I'm good. Like that whole staring contest thing. And you know, we've talked about Parag, and you know, we're very pro player on this show. Not that I don't understand why things like this happen, and am only blaming ownership. Like Aiyuk, his stand-in had a lot of theatrics that didn't necessarily make the 49ers coaching staff, the guys who were sticking up for him, John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, it didn't make them necessarily happy to see the hijinks that Aiyuk was doing last year. But I'm sure they understood why he was doing it. And then for it to happen this way, it just all feels like if it was going to eventually happen this way, ship this brother off to Pittsburgh like you were going to do so last year before the season started. Like, why do we waste a whole 2 years just to see who's going to blink first? And then it turns out nobody blinks and we move on and we lose 2 years of, you know, this nonsensical story. That's my frustration. Like, I don't really care.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
That is the frustration in that we, you know, his agent has played this masterfully. He, you know, if, for those who don't remember, let's recap. He went from being under contract to having several trade offers and contracts. You know, so basically he had a sort of quasi free agency. And then what ends up happening is the Niners aren't jazzed about the compensation that they would get from either Pittsburgh or the Pats. And then there was some things with the Pats. I guess he wasn't so sold on their whole quarterback situation. So he probably
imagine if he could go back in history and get himself to the Pats last year.
He didn't realize they were going to draft Drake May in the next year. So yeah, that'll be an interesting player if he hits free agency. But the thought, you know, was that they weren't jazzed about the compensation that they were going to get. So they end up signing the deal anyway. And then now it looks like they are going to get nothing for him. You know, I see all the Jed pundits trying to say that, you know, they realize all this cap space. Well, I guess, but that's just for the only thing that they're going to get really is they don't end up paying the guarantee for next year. He's already gotten $50 million basically to rehab. And then, you know, I was listening to David Sampson yesterday, and he was talking about the only thing that they could be talking about in terms of meetings and stuff is they might have put language in the contract having to do with his rehab. But the thing about that is if he wanted to fight that grievance, that's already been adjudicated. The team really does not have any say in how you rehab. Like, for example, the whole Christian Wilkins thing with the Raiders, that all boiled down to they wanted him to have surgery and he didn't want to have surgery. So, but the team doesn't control that. They can't, they don't have any say over your medical care. They can make recommendations, but ultimately, as long as you have a doctor and have a care plan, the team, they can be pissed off about it, but they can't tell you how to rehab your injury. So if that is the crux of their argument, that's a grievance that he would win. But what it seems like to me, like you said earlier, he's willing to pay 20 or forego $26 million in order to become an unrestricted free agent, which, you know, kind of makes sense. I'm sure a lot of players in that circumstance, if they could pay to get to unrestricted free agency, they would do just that. Because I, you know, I have, number one, although he has not been cleared, I have no reason to believe that he's not healthy. You know, and you listen to Kyle Shanahan, he seems to believe that he could still play this season, which doesn't make any sense to me if he doesn't have any guaranteed money left on this deal. Why on earth he would ever step foot on the field this season? I just don't see that happening. But this whole thing is so bizarre that at this point nothing would surprise me anymore.
Yeah, and you know, you see the how the team, you know, everyone's looking for wide receivers. So like you said, to be able to just be free to sign and get a maybe even a better deal than the one that the Niners signed him to is going to be in his interest, in his best interest maybe. But you know, here's why I don't really necessarily care too much when the players kind of rebel, or you know, maybe they find some disfavor with the system, is because of scenarios just like this. Like, I'm not saying Parag Marate specifically set up this deal so that they could void next year. I don't think that they did it with that in mind, but it's pretty clear that they had some idea that, you know, there's going to be an out at some point if we wanted to get out. And if there was more disagreements, we'll be able to get out of this. And it's just the way that the NFL salary cap works, the way that you can, you know, create all of this bonus money that people look at and go, oh, look, $120 million. And then when you break down what the contract actually is, how many escalators and bonuses you have to actually hit to get close to that number. Like the Colin Kaepernick contract was like the number one contract where you look at it and you go, okay, this is a fake contract, actually. Like, there's no way he gets to any of this stuff. And it's just for the headlines. So, you know, I know a lot of people are probably mad at BA. A lot of people should rightfully so be mad at the way the 49ers handled this. They're, you know, both are at fault, of course. But
I'm not here. It's messy on both sides. It really is.
I'm not gonna say BA is a bad person. You know, it's his fault or what? Like, there's so much drama involved in scenarios like this that it's, you know, it's both sides acting kind of like children and not coming to solutions on stuff. And when that happens, the 49ers historically have shown the ownership side of this does not handle that well. They will show their ass as more than the players will. And we've seen it with Jed York and Trent Baalke and Jim Harbaugh. Like, that's what this kind of stuff reminds me of, is just going all the way back to those years. And it's like, yeah, we have all of that evidence that this is not just on a player or on a coach. It is on the entire organization.
And most times, and that's why I have applauded this situation, honestly, is because most times in situations like this, and for years and years historically, it's the players that get screwed in these situations. So the fact that he was able to nick them for $50 million is, you know, Jay's not going to miss it. And, you know, they get this cap space. If that's how they want to spin it as a win for them, that's great, you know. And willfully, you know, and the argument has been that I've been having on the internet is that he'll be lucky if he makes $10 million next year. I'm like, man, look, what you're saying, and I can see that, you know, he's coming off a major injury, but what you are postulating is that there are 31 completely rational actors out there running football teams. And I can tell you right now that where I'm at right now in Las Vegas, Mark Davis will give him a nine-figure contract tomorrow if he could. So again, there are places in this league. Tennessee is another place that if they can get their hands on a number one wide receiver and not have to pay anything for it and use their draft capital other places. Again, you know, I get that, you know, the fans like to side with the owners in these things, which is bizarre to me, and really want him to lose in this situation. History just tells me that that's not the case, because what they are not is going to be in lockstep with Jed York in trying to ensure that Brandon Ayuk is the loser in this deal. If they believe that they can improve their situation by giving him this money, they all are going to act in their best interest every time. So the thought that, and I, you know, and the also the other thing is that his agent doesn't know exactly, what let me know that he's healthy, is that they did not, if he's not healthy, then you fight like hell to get that $27 million, because, you know, that might be the last money you're able to get. But the fact that they aren't even going to file a grievance on this lets me know. And also, agents know the market. And it's not like this guy seems too sharp to like be going out here in the market blind and not knowing that there are other teams out here that would be interested in a 27-year-old wide receiver in this market. So like we already know they've had conversations with Pittsburgh. They've already had conversations with the Patriots, maybe not this year, but I'm sure his agent has a good sense of where the teams are that need wide receivers and knows that he's going out into the market. He would be the top free agent. Pickens is not leaving Dallas. They're going to franchise him for sure. So Brandon Ayuk would all of a sudden be the top wide receiver free agent on the market. And that's got to be pretty lucrative, I would imagine.
Yeah, I use the word evil genius. This is the evil genius of the NFL, by the way, because what you just said, which teams kind of believe that they are possibly a player away. Now, we're not just talking about a player away from being like a Super Bowl contender, but just a player away from maybe being in the playoffs. Do you know, even in losing, the Panthers are still out of the, there's seven teams that make the playoffs. The Panthers are still number nine, even after losing to us. The Cowboys are number 10. The Falcons are number 11. These are some average football teams. We saw the Falcons. You know, they have some good players, but you know, you're just trying to get into that top seven. On the other side, Steelers 6-5, Texans 6-5, Dolphins 4-7 are number 11. There is a middle ground in the league who probably, we're a wide receiver away from being in the tournament next year. And where someone like BA, he sees that, his agent sees that. And if 14 teams make the playoffs, we as smart fans know, out of those 14 teams, you know, who really has a chance to win the Super Bowl, like three or four? But these owners don't look at it that way. They look at it as, can we get an extra home game in the playoffs? Can we sell this idea that we're competing for merch? It makes your season tickets more exciting, like just being competitive. Like all of those things matter. And so that is the evil genius of the NFL, just having so many teams think that they still have a shot. And like the Niners are 7th, 8-4. And you and I are like, yeah, they're kind of one and done in the playoffs, big whoop. But that's because we've seen five Super Bowls. Like some of these other teams have not seen that. Right.
We know what a good football team looks like. And we can go back 2 years. I mean, this team is nowhere near as good as the 2023 team. But coming off of a 6-win season, 10, 11 wins and a playoff berth, that is progress. We tend to be more rational. I don't think this is a Super Bowl team. This team is not going to be in Santa Clara in February. But for me, that is,
you know,
not
who will be though. Jed will be there.
Oh, for
Parag.
Sure.
Parag and Jed will be in their box.
Absolutely, will be there. But you know, I see this in a more long-term way. I'm just looking for progress. Every season doesn't have to be a Super Bowl win for it to be successful, in my opinion. But it's funny that you mentioned all those teams that convince themselves that they are a BA away from the playoffs. But then you have at the top end, you look at, like, for sure, Buffalo could see if they had BA, they are a wide receiver away from maybe winning multiple Super Bowls, because that is their defense is a problem too.
Yeah.
But Josh Allen just really doesn't have anybody to throw the ball to. Drake May, again, he's relying on, 32-year-old Stephon Diggs he is his best target, which is unsustainable. It would be not, I'm sure Vrabel would love having a 27-year-old wide receiver one. So the notion that he's not going to have a market is crazy. But the Niners are doing, like, I guess they can convince themselves they're doing just fine without him. I don't know how sustainable that is, and they would definitely need to be about replacing that production. But this has been a bizarre week, and it was great to see. But like you say, look at the Panthers. They would have been in first place in their division if they won last night. So I mean, it's really bizarre and crazy. The Cowboys, like you mentioned them, if they went out. And they probably won't, obviously. But I mean, the fact that, as bad as that season started out for them, that we're even talking about them in playoffs in the same sentence, is, it just goes to show you, like you said, that the league, the parity that the league has seemingly been striving towards is here. I mean, it is really here.
All right. Let's talk about this game. As I said, I'm actually in Arizona, so I don't have my normal setup. It is the holiday week. We'll do this a little shorter than normal. And plus, this game was just a game. There's not a whole lot coming out of it, at least that I've seen so far. I guess the big topic, as we mentioned, Brock throwing three picks. I was actually... Now, three picks on three consecutive drives is kind of a thing. Like, by that third interception, somebody needed to take him and go, okay, dude, like, let's pull back a little bit, just a little bit. But like, those first two interceptions, especially the one to Pretty Ricky in the end zone, I really liked that idea, because he's trying to hit a home run. And what we've seen from the 49ers offense this year is they were a chunk offense. They were moving the ball down the field in small chunks. Mac was very consistent, and he was getting rid of the ball early. But we need Brock to be more like this if the 49ers have any chance to do anything in the playoffs, because the defense only gave up 9 points here to a very bad Carolina Panthers offense. And I'm actually so surprised. I just figured Carolina was going to try and run it down our throats, and they just didn't. They really didn't. They tried to get Bryce out and moving and running himself. And I was so surprised about that. But we know that this defense is not good. The way that they're going to be able to win some games, especially here down the stretch, is by the offense just clicking on all cylinders. And you could also see the way that some of these plays were called. No one is happier that Brock is back than Shanahan. The creativity in some of these formations and all the movement before the line, before the play call in the line of scrimmage, like, Kyle was like, oh man, my toy is back here. I get to do all of the stuff that I couldn't do with the other QB. So I don't mind him getting some of this stuff out of the way, because he is going to have to hit some of these big plays. And it's unfortunate that Ricky has come back and just kind of been a decoy for two games. You can tell, like, they have just not been able to shake him loose. You have Kittle, which we've been begging for, right? The ability for Kittle to get out and make plays. And then you have CMC. CMC leads the NFL in both catches and running back touches. Like, what the hell? This is incredible. Like, this dude is just, you know, we were thinking, like, last year, we're like, oh, man, are we on the other side of CMC? Is this going to be an issue, you know, with this, the tendonitis and his Achilles and everything? But he's come back and, you know, they can't block for him like they used to. Some of that, I think, is also a Brock thing. Once Brock is able to hit some of these big plays, then I think the running game opens up a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what they need Brock to be able to hit on this big stuff if they're going to actually play some competitive and strong football late in the season, because they're going to get scored on. And Max, you know, 10 yards here, 10 yards here. Let's throw the ball down the field and take 7 minutes for every drive and then possibly kick a field goal. Like, that was solid for what they needed while Brock was away. And also, that was before Bosa and Warner were completely off the team. Like, but that was before they got injured too. With the way that the team currently works on the defense, I think they do need YOLO Brock a little bit. He just needs to, chemistry wise, you can tell he's just so excited to be out there. And he's letting it fly. I think we'll see a much better Brock in these next couple of weeks. And he and Shanahan will be more in sync. And hopefully, you know, Pretty Ricky will be able to take advantage of some stuff. We haven't heard anything about whether or not he's slow right now or he's bothered, but he's played two games in a row. So I'm just going to assume that, you know, they're taking him out of stuff.
They just need to get locked in.
Yeah. So I'm fine with Brock. You don't want to see three interceptions in a game like this. It doesn't hurt them, but I like seeing what they can possibly do with him being able to take shots because they're going to need it.
Well, when you look at the all 22, they were there. And I mean, some of you could see on the TV, the shorter options were there on both the interceptions. He just decided that he was going to take the shot. And, you know, like you said before, and you said previously, that is something that this offense just needs. I mean, you have to be able to throw these teams out of that too high safety. So, you know, if you want to get them to the point, throw them into it. So they have to play the too high and they can't just bring that safety down in the box and play the run. You want to put them in coverage. And the way you do that is by threatening them down the field. And we just saw Mac wasn't going to do that. He took the safe throws. And I mean, like you say, for your backup quarterback, that is what you want from him. You want him to come in and manage things. I'm not one who believes that game manager is necessarily a pejorative. And that's what he did. He did that well. But that's not necessarily what you pay Brock for. You don't pay him to come in and just take the check down to take the short pass. You want him to go out there and make plays. And that's what you get from him. I'm not worried about, I've seen enough of Brock to not be worried about his accuracy. He was really inaccurate yesterday, but that is not a problem that he has shown in the past. He's shown himself to be a very accurate passer. So I'm just going to go ahead and chalk it up to still a bit of rust and just a bad day. It was just a bad, I am beyond the referendums. It's not a referendum every game on Brock Purdy. I know some of the fan base still don't, you know, am I putting him as a top? We've adjudicated Brock. Is he a top quarterback? No, but he's one. I would say he's one of the top 10 to 12 quarterbacks in the league. And you're not going to, he's way better than McCorkle, and you're just not, you sign him because top 10 quarterbacks don't fall off of trees.
Yeah.
So he's our guy.
And no shot at Bryce, because I do root for that dude. But just look at, like, yeah. I'm sure if Bryce was under Shanahan, he would be much better than he is, because Shanahan would figure some things out. But look at that poor dude, man. That dude, no confidence. He didn't feel like he wasn't feeling where things were happening for positive plays. It was like he's dropping back, and his first instinct is like, I might need to get out and run on this thing. And I was just like, I just felt bad for him. Like, man, after all these years, you still cannot find the, what, you know, whatever the offense is, or the instinct, or, you know, even on some simple throws like that 2-point conversion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like that play, it looks like the back was out in the flat. I don't know if he saw something that we couldn't see on the TV. He didn't choose that. And then he throws this like laser beam like down the middle. I'm like, man, a 2-point conversion on the 1-yard line should not have equated for you having to like do all of that to try and get like the, just, I don't know. I was so happy. I was like, you know what? As much as some of the problems that we have in this organization and in this team and the injury luck and all that, after these last two games, would you rather be an Arizona Cardinals fan or a Carolina Panthers fan? Like, no way. No way.
It's just a mess.
We'll look ahead to Cleveland, because I think the Cleveland game is going to be super duper interesting.
But it really is.
We got to say, Jair Brown, two very timely interceptions. That was nice to see. Cleveland Farrell, who was inactive last week, got a nice sack where he just went right by whoever that the left tackle was and grabbed Bryce and just tossed him down. I thought that was awesome. But this defense is going to be like, I don't even know if you can call it a bend but don't break. It is probably a little bit worse than that. But when you play Arizona and Carolina 2 weeks in a row, you're not too worried. Where you're worried is when you play some of these better teams that they're going to have to play down the line that we talked about last week. But I'll pull up the schedule again just for the next few games here.
Bears.
So Browns this weekend, and the Niners have not had great success going into Cleveland of late, and it looks like it's going to be supposed to be raining, which is bad for Brock. And they just have a really good defense. I wonder, you know, can you give the ball to CMC any more than they have been? I think we're just going to see a heavy dose of CMC, Brian Robinson, short passing game, probably very predictable, and they're just going to try and win a low scoring game. That'll be my guess. But then you have the bye week, Titans at home. Now you don't really want to put a W next to anything this late in the season, but it's a game that they should win. That's a game that they should feel very comfortable winning. But then you close the season, Colts, Bears, Seahawks. So this is where you hope Brock is fully locked in, and you hope that offense is humming by the end of these last three games of the season, because those are going to be the most important ones. And, you know, should they beat Cleveland in Cleveland? They should. It's not a guarantee.
Dur-mania.
Yeah.
Dur-mania happening.
Cleveland's 3-8.
They are excited. They are excited in Cleveland, though.
3-8, and I think Troy Aikman may have said it last night. Myles Garrett has more sacks than the entire 49er team. So I don't think Brock's going to be sitting out there with like five-step drops trying to rip it too much. I think they're going to really change up the game plan, because that he could wreak terror on the 49ers if put in certain situations. So I'm interested to see how Shanahan attacks that defense.
Greeny had a prop this morning, asking the question, can Garrett break the record, the sack record this week? He's got 18. The record is 22, and it's week going into week 13. That's crazy. We do not want him to break any record against us.
Could they just could the 49ers break the record in how many screen passes they throw to Myles Garrett's side after he just beats the it's going to be Trent, right?
Oh, you know, he's going to try to find McKivitz.
Yeah, that yeah, so wherever he lines up, let's just throw screen passes to that side because he's going to be so deep in the backfield by the time the ball's out. Maybe that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah, so you know, that is what this season coming up, you know, this game, then a bye, and hopefully, you know, whatever stuff that they have currently with injuries and stuff, you get that bye. It's so late in the season. I think this is the latest you can actually have the bye in the 49ers without this bye. So, hey, man, they're going to make it exciting. We got 5 to go. They're 8-4. We win 3. I think they're in, right?
Oh, yeah,
three well, they're 100% in.
They're saying, you know, I don't know how the math works. They're saying they're 90%. So they're basically in at this point, you know.
But
I don't know how the math works.
I'm guessing the math suggests that they're beating the Browns and the Titans 100%. So you got to take care of business in those two games. And then you got
to
win.
That gets you to 10.
Yeah, then you got to be 100% sure, you got to win one of those last three.
Yeah. I mean, if you get to 11 wins, yeah, you are.
You're in.
100%.
And then it's amazing because the Rammies at 9-2, they look like world beaters right now. And then the Bucks, or not the Bucks, the Seahawks at 8-3. 8-3 in the NFC is where the Eagles and the Bears are for first place in their divisions. 8-3 in the AFC, you know, they would be ahead of most of those divisions. So the Niners, the Niners, the Seahawks, and the Rams, that's iron sharpening iron, man. Like, you know, those three teams are kind of built to beat each other. And because the NFC West is so tough, they're three of the better teams in the entire conference. So I think that bodes well for how well the Niners and the Rams and the Seahawks have just been as teams over the last several years. They're competitive. So I like that aspect of it. Now, do I want to see the Rams go out there and win the Super Bowl? Maybe not, but
not really. Mm-mm.
Stafford for MVP is kind of like people are circling that one already. I'm like, wow,
it's
where
a thing.
How did we get here from Stafford is washed to Stafford for MVP?
Stafford's back is broken and he's gonna the Rams aren't gonna pay him is where we were 6 months ago, and now he's an MVP candidate. That's crazy.
All right. Is there anything else you wanted to bring up before we land this one?
Not at all. I'm glad we were able to get it in.
All right. So next week, Niners and Browns are the early game. So we will try and come back, a little while after that game is over and go live on this.
Sounds
feed.
Good.
But that's going to be it for BSPN for this week. No Golden State Hoop. No Thompson to Clark. We're taking the rest of the week off, but Rod and I held it down for the channel. So, all right. Thank you to Rod. I hope you have a great holiday week. To all of our listeners and viewers, hope you all have a good week as well. I will be back in the car on Friday, driving all the way back home. this is what you do. This is what you do for family, man. All right.
Yes.
For Rod, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.
Happy holidays, everyone.